Previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
I can't wait for next week. It's going to be an all-singing episode.
I cannot remember the capital of Maine to save my life.
Brussels sprouts weren't exactly a great snack to bring.
Hello.
Hey, you know, I'm sad that we lost the episode that came before this one, which was the all-singing episode.
That one was a magnificent one. If not for the courage of the fearless crew, the episode would have been found, but got lost.
In fact, that's true. I am Jonathan Strickland.
I am Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Eric Sandine.
And together, we would probably make a better band than the one that was in the movie we had to watch.
Oh, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, so if you're new to this show,
shall we just jump right into it?
Let's just do the little thing of how much time. So what we do, guys, is if you're just watching the show for the first time, we swear on the show. This is very explicit. And
fuck yes, we do.
And what's going to happen in this episode, we're going to talk about a movie that I picked. We go taking turns
fuck
when it comes
to
picking movies.
Fuck yeah, you did.
Fuck yeah, I picked a movie in the loosest sense of the word. Okay, so we try this challenge because we're so connected all the time with phones, tablets, whatever. How long can we watch a movie with undivided attention, no beer, no snarky comments, like not watching with anybody? How long before you turn to a second screen before that's about it. So the movie this week was Don't Go Into the Woods, a film by Vincent D'Onofrio, who I know is Edgar.
To be fair, it's Don't Go In the Woods.
Oh, excuse me.
Don't Go Into the Woods.
Now go in the woods.
Right.
Vincent D'Onofrio made this movie. It was in the Tribeca Film Festival, apparently. And I just know D'Onofrio as the guy from Full Metal Jacket. And
Gomer Pyle.
Edgar from Men in Black. So yeah. He's got quite the range. Let's just say that.
Also, Law and
he's
Order,
been in
if you
a
haven't.
Ton of shit.
If you've missed that entire show, I guess. Yeah.
I avoid Law and Order. The show, not actual Law and Order. But yes. So how long did you go, Eric, before turning to a second screen, beer or commentary?
It was about, I don't know what the time was. I think it was about 28 minutes or something like that. But it was when they were sitting around the campfire and started the singing multiple songs. Then I was just like, I can't pay attention anymore.
Jonathan?
Yeah. I got 20 minutes in, and that's after they started singing, but I did not realize when I stopped at that moment, because I actually stopped for a while. I didn't go back to it till today, and I had started watching this over the weekend. And I got 20 minutes in. When I started back up, I was horrified to find out that the part I had watched was just the first of what Eric has alluded to as a song montage.
Yes, there's that. Okay, so I have several different times for this. I'm going to explain why.
Okay.
At 3 minutes and 31 seconds, I check on another device to see if this thing is shot in 15 frames per second or what.
Seriously?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought there was something wrong with my Xbox for a solid 30 minutes.
That's why I took an iPad out. I brought up Netflix, brought up the scene, and it was still as choppy. So I'm like, okay, it's not the device. So if you want to say when I took a second screen, that's what I did at 3 minutes and 31 seconds. Now, at 5 minutes, I said, fuck this. I'm turning on motion smoothness on my television because this thing's making me sick. I can't watch this shaky cam and have this just 15 frames per second thing. I have no idea why it's shot like this, by the way.
Holy crap, I forgot that was a thing you could do. You're a brilliant man, son of a bitch.
At 5 minutes, I take out my iPad again because it has the Harmony Remote app to take care of it. So that could be a second screen. So far, I don't know if that really counts.
Did that help at all?
What's that?
Did it help at all?
Yeah, it did help a lot, actually. It was surprisingly, for the shots that aren't moving too much, if they actually have the camera set, it was a lot less jarring. But the point where I completely lost it, where I had to, like, I couldn't keep the snark in. Liz was sitting with me. She was being quiet, like, the whole time. So, like, I just couldn't take it. At 29, 25, I wrote it down, because they are around the campfire singing fucking songs. It says here, I have to be and then it stops, snarky overload. Like, I just couldn't watch this shit without just saying, why is nothing happening in this goddamn movie? So 29:25 is my real thing. Never pulled out a second screen, just started talking a lot. And I did finish the movie, and I said, it's only 82 minutes. How bad could it be? It's a pile of shit.
No, it rapidly gets even worse from the gathered around. Well, first of all, there's a second gathered around the fire scene later in the movie. Yeah. And then you sit through more singing. All right, so let me give you my synopsis for what this film is. It's a horror movie musical with some comedic undertones. Or at least that seems to be the intention. I don't mean to suggest that this movie is in any way horrifying, musically adept, or funny. I merely say what it attempts to do. Here's the story. A shitty emo folk band goes out to the middle of the woods because the shitty emo folk band leader wants them to record write five new songs to go on an album. And he wants it there to be no distractions. He wants no phones. He wants no alcohol or drugs. He wants no women to be nearby. Then a bunch of girls show up. Then people start dying left and right. It is meant to suggest that there is some weird homicidal maniac in the woods. It turns out to be the lead singer. The end. That's the movie. That's all that happens in the movie.
But with a lot of shitty singing in the middle.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of shitty singing. And we should point out, when we say shitty singing, we don't just mean that the songs were shitty, which they were. There were maybe one or two songs in the entire movie that I found even remotely listenable. But the actual singing for a lot of the characters is really shitty. Like, they cannot carry a tune. And I say this as someone who can't carry a tune, but I can sing better than the fucking drummer could have. Oh, my God.
Johnny, the drummer? Yes. So,
is that the drummer?
Yes. So, I made a note of their names because they were quite loose with that. They're like, oh, here's Nick. We'll tell you that an hour in.
No. See, here's easy. We don't call him Nick. Let's don't call him Nick. Let's call him Frodo. Because that's the hairstyle he had.
That fucker looked just like Elijah Wood. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Except when he sang, which he made the weirdest faces. I said I stopped in 20 minutes. I actually wrote down the line that made me stop. I stopped when Nick, a.k.a. Frodo, the wandering minstrel, was telling the band the legend of the Wendigo. Now, for those who don't know, Wendigo, that's a legend, Native American legend, about the kind of evil monster / spirit a person can turn into if they consume human flesh. So essentially it's a cannibalism warning. And I wrote, I had to quit when the main character, Nick/Frodo, describes a Wendigo as a half man, half beast, half corpse. Because that's three halves.
Yeah, I caught that line too, and I was just like, could that ever work? Could you be half man, half beast? Yeah, you could do that, but then that half, or that whole, another half of it's half dead. Now that was me trying to rationalize
this. You can't
have
three halves in one thing.
No, you can't.
That's impossible. That's 150%. So, yeah, I was like, that's fucking insane. So I wrote that specifically down. Did we lose Eric?
Think so.
I've lost Eric.
He'll be back.
We'll get Eric back. But yeah, the half man, half beast, half corpse totally lost me. And so I wrote it down. And I'm not sure if it may have been intended to be in there and to be a joke. But it wasn't it didn't come across as a joke. It just came across as dumb. And let's see. I have a little bit in here. I said, 24 minutes in, and I kind of want to follow Gomer Pyle's example from Full Metal Jacket. And if you don't get that reference, you need to watch Full Metal Jacket. I said, I don't care about anyone in this movie so far, and I'm actually in favor of these kids being killed off. This is a horror movie musical in which a band goes out to the woods to write 5 songs for a new album. They want no distractions, et cetera, et cetera. Despite everyone appearing to have the brains and personality of a screwdriver, they all manage to write a song about sounds being loudest when they come from the grave. It's your typical folk song slash emo kind of stuff. The group's manager, whom Nick says is their former manager now, is trying to track them down. He's wearing a backpack with an extendable handle that's already extended out. He's wearing it as a backpack. He appears to have been grabbed by something about 18 minutes into the movie. Shortly after the Wendigo story, a group of girls sneaks up on the band. They're wearing masks and carrying flashlights and then reveal themselves to be ladies. Nick didn't want ladies to be a distraction, so he gets super moody and sings a song. Most of the lyrics of the song go like this.
He's not making it up. There's moaning. It actually says, so it's a melodic moaning. That was in the subtitles.
Yeah.
Nice. My
note on that song was, song lyrics, series of grunts. This dude is fucking deep.
So Carlos the guitarist asks a chick about a tattoo of a busty lady on her arm. The lady is wearing a cutoff t-shirt and you can clearly see that her nipples are erect. So Carlos asks the girl who the chick is because, quote, the chick is hot. And the girl says, that's my mom. So I guess that's classy. I wanted to immortalize my hot, erect nippled mom on my arm forever.
And it's not even like a throwaway joke, like, that's my mom, and they just move on. She goes, that's my mom. I want to grow up to be her. Like, yeah. There's actual – there's more talking about it.
Hey, Ayaz.
Yes.
Ayaz, did you know cats can't understand Chinese?
Okay, now this part of the movie. The cats not understanding Chinese. There was some really – and I'm going to – I think there's some really believable dialogue in this movie. Particularly when they're having parallel conversations about who would survive if they turned cannibal and remembering things from the John Fogerty copyright case of plagiarism. Like, I thought that was kind of pretty realistic. And the second I am actually back into this movie when this is happening, they cut back to super emo Nick playing guitar, and he seems like he's really far away, and then they cut further back. He's like 10 feet from everybody. He's by a tree playing guitar. He's not in the conversation, and they don't seem to even hear him. I guess it's the woods, so I'll give dissipation of sound. But yeah, some of the dialogue. They're teenagers. They're stupid.
It was realistic dialogue, but that doesn't mean it was enjoyable.
No.
Like it's the kind of thing where you'd say, you know how people talk about Clerks, that the conversations in Clerks are realistic in the sense that people are talking about geeky stuff. And when geeks get together, they talk about geeky stuff. Here's the thing, though. Clerks and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and movies and shows that are like that, where characters talk in quote-unquote believable ways, they're not talking in a believable way at all. That's not what our conversations sound like. That's what we wish our conversations sound like, because it takes out all the stupid stuff and leaves the fun, witty, fast-paced stuff, which is a part of our conversations, but is not the sum total of what our conversations are like. This movie presented what real conversations are like and displays in full effect how shitty they are and that we don't fucking want to see it in a goddamn movie.
Oh, boy.
It was, I mean, and by the way, that's all the notes I wrote, because I didn't bother writing the notes when I started up again. The only other things I'll say about this are that the movie, it doesn't play fair, right? It is essentially presenting these two, like, mysterious hunters who are seen multiple times throughout the film by characters independently of Nick being there. That's important, because Nick being the killer is one of those things that is not entirely obvious even by the end of the movie.
No.
But they're seen by other characters independent of Nick being there. So the implication is, in fact, these two weird, creepy hunters really are there, and at least at one point really do sneak through their camp and snoop around while everyone's asleep. So they are a red herring. Then you have this mysterious figure in black that that's wearing a mesh mask and a pork pie style hat, walking around with a sledgehammer, and you're meant to think, okay, well, this is the killer. And then ultimately, through very ineffective reveals, you're led to believe that, no, it's actually Nick. And apparently this masked killer is a manifestation of his angst or something. And I don't know who is the person who's supposed to be imagining the killer. I don't know if it's supposed to be Nick or if it's supposed to be the girl or... But it doesn't make any sense. Like, Nick could not have been in all the places he needed to be to kill all the people he needed to kill and also be with his ex-girlfriend chatting with her. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's physically impossible for it to have worked.
That's the way I read it, too. It seemed like, okay, there's a scene where Nick, at the very end, is standing on the top of a rock and is... sort of girlfriend Ashley is across the stream there, and he looks like he's sneaking upon the killer, grabs a sledgehammer and tries to attack him, but they keep flicking back and forth, showing the shots of just Nick and the killer, just the killer. So I'm like, okay, maybe this is what we're supposed to be like. Oh, this is the big reveal. This is the guy, or Nick is covered in blood at certain points, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it was the switching back and forth with like the covered in blood, the Nick covered in blood, Nick not covered in blood, mysterious killer, like flicking back and forth three different ways and trying to be like, oh, you should understand this because this movie's deep. And well, pretty much I remember getting to that scene going, what?
there's also Nick covered in blood, Nick not covered in blood. Both versions of Nick still are singing that goddamn awful song.
Right.
About being heard from the grave, that was the song?
I think that was the one about the fucking hurricane. He had a song about a hurricane. Like, there were two songs
that
he
recorded
at
the end or whatever.
About the hurricane, yeah. Both of them were, like, all of these things were terrible. All of
Eric,
them.
Did you... I'm sorry, I was wondering if Eric has notes, and I'm looking at my envelopes of notes. Just wait.
My notes, let's see. This dude's been blind the whole time. I did not pick up on that until about an hour until they explicitly stated it.
So you didn't think it was weird that he was walking through the woods with his hand on the shoulder of the guy in front of him?
I don't think I noticed.
Every 30 seconds, I'm blind. Like, yeah. Every sentence it's that like, guy like, said started with, well, I'm blind.
I think I must have just like disregarded anything he said.
Did you pick up on the fact that he was blind when he sang the fucking song called I'm Blind?
But he also said he was deaf and dead.
Yeah.
Blind, deaf, and dead. I got to tell you, by the end of that song, I was wishing the same thing for myself.
And then, so Nick reveals that his brother died at some point, I think.
When he was 14.
Right, and that's like such an inconsequential line of dialogue. Like, it seems like it's supposed to be this big thing, and it's supposed to be important, but you care so little for this character that you're just like, I really don't care. My note after is, oh my god, is this a fucking rock opera? Because he walks off and his girlfriend starts singing.
Well, you have characters who burst into song. Like at first, all the singing is done in the context of a band with their musical instruments in the woods trying to write songs. So all the music makes at least sense contextually. But then there are moments where people just burst into song with full musical accompaniment when they are nowhere near the camp where all the musical instruments are, when it just becomes a musical. And that's when you're like, okay, this movie doesn't know what it is. Eric.
Oh, and then I have him play a note on him playing the song at the end. What the fuck? Why is he playing that damn song? I'm going to assume he's the killer, but evidently not. Is it the manager? What happened to the manager anyway?
The manager was killed 18 minutes into the movie. Well, to be fair, though, we didn't know that until later for sure, because what happens is the manager is peering into what has... I guess it's supposed to be a lean-to, but it's really just a whole bunch of branches that have been propped up against a tree and he's peeking into it when suddenly we see the camera rush at him as he turns around and that's it. So yeah. We didn't know for a fact he was killed, but we assume that he was killed.
My last note is, okay, keyboard in the windpipe is pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was the best kill.
Yeah.
That was very good. All right.
Yeah, I noticed that Ayaz had said that he's going to forfeit his next two choices.
Yes, I was so enraged with this movie that I wish I had recorded what I had said throughout the movie just so people could hear how pissed off I was during this. There was a point where I said out loud to Liz, I'm like, I would rather be watching a talking cat right now. This pile of shit shouldn't exist. Because it was driving me crazy. I was just...
Do you mean a talking cat ? !
Yes, not to be confused with a talking cat ? Which was the related...
Just a talking cat.
Actually, watching a talking cat would be fine. You can only say one thing to each person.
Depends on what the cat talks about.
All right, I'm going to go through my notes.
If the cat looks at you and just says, I've been licking my ass for 3 straight hours, that's probably not really that entertaining either.
Well, you can put it away. And you make
then
a good point.
Just hear, I'm licking my ass over and over, just through the door. It'd be terrible. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ayaz.
If anybody ever wanted to have Jonathan Strickland yell that phrase, there you go. Now you got it. Yep, there's a soundboard waiting to happen. All right. So the first note I got here is, I hope the frame rate goes up. It's clear, but it's super choppy. 331, check, check choppiness. Checked on iPad, seriously choppy. So then I write very largely, fuck, because I can't stand it. Underneath that says, get Harmony app to turn on motion smoothness. Moving camera work plus low FPS is giving me motion sickness. Lead guy looks like Elijah Wood. Let's destroy the phones. Oh, yeah, because this is a retreat. Nick decides he's going to take everybody's phones, goes off with Carlo, to an area when he finds like a hunting shed, finds an axe, they start chopping wood, and then they destroy the phones with it. Then the kid axes his shoe. Most violence I've ever seen against a shoe in a movie ever. I think the blind kid is blind because, as Jonathan mentioned, they fucking mention it every couple of seconds.
I missed that for like an hour.
I don't know how you were blind to that. They brought an electric bass. They do this little montage where they show all the instruments they bring. And they show an electric bass. And I'm like, that's odd. Because if you ever heard electric bass without an amp, it's really hard to hear. That's me. So, seems like the filmmaker's actually trying to build characters, which is integral if you're planning to kill them later. So in the beginning, I'm actually optimistic, hoping that we're getting character development. We got Nick. He's really kind of moody. He's trying to drive everybody. We got the blind guy, he's got his obvious issues. We've got Carlo, he's a fucking idiot because he like axes his shoe and he has to walk around with one shoe throughout the whole movie. So there we go. The terror, girlfriends, lead equals Nick. Yay, drugs and alcohol because the girls show up. So there's drugs, there's alcohol, there's a campfire. So I'm thinking now we're actually going to get the standard horror movie of, hey, there's going to be the standard, okay, those kids are doing drugs and they're having sex. Guess who's going to get killed? That shit doesn't happen. All right. Apparently, the guys don't know the girls. Damn it, is anything going to happen in this movie? 26 minutes in, and nothing has happened apart from a glimpse of a death and an implied death. Because like you were saying, with the manager, the camera just zooms in behind him. And it says, loud, ominous music in the subtitles. So that was weird. Bass is clearly heard around the campfire. Did they bring a portable amp? I guess so. During the groupie song, they're playing a song about groupie, which I thought was a little funny, that everyone around the campfire knows. So I didn't know I thought they were making new songs, but they were playing songs that everyone knew. Quote, we're only here because Ashley's in love with the lead. That made a lot of sense because it didn't seem like the girls knew any of the band members, except Charlotte, who was like pining for Carlos. 29:25, I have to be, this is nothing, snarky overload. This pacing is bullshit. Emo kids, alcohol, campfire, weed, groupies, nothing. Charlotte wants Carlo. There's this woman, a blonde, she's just staring at Carlo, and she gets angry at him because Carlo is going after the girl who has a tattoo somewhere that he hasn't seen yet.
Yeah, first he goes after the girl with a tattoo on her arm. Then he goes after the girl who has a tattoo somewhere.
She had to take her
Meanwhile,
pants off.
Meanwhile, there's this gorgeous young lady who's just making eyes at Carlo, and he totally ignores her. And I guess there was supposed to be a past there that is kind of hinted at, but since it's never fleshed out, you're just like, what the hell is this guy's problem? Like, well, this one girl's really into me, but I'm totally gonna check out this other girl who doesn't seem to be into me at all first.
And there's, in the group of girls that show up, they don't really seem to be into the band. It's Ashley who's into the lead. There's Charlotte who's into Carlo. And then there's like Georgia who sings. It's like Georgia's going to sing for us. Like, who the fuck is Georgia and why is she singing?
That completely struck me too. This entire group of girls shows up to follow this band into the woods to go camping with them. And yet none of the girls seem to actually like anyone in the band.
So, well, and then there's like a French
Eric,
girl.
After watching the guys in the band, can you really blame them?
Like, why did he even show up? That's what I couldn't figure out. 35 minutes in, smashed windshield. I was actually very happy about that. Finally, we get some death. Charlotte gets killed. Georgia gets killed. And there's a note, very excited. The amp, I seize it. All right. Envelope 2. After hearing I'm Glad I'm Blind, I think I get the band style. Just suck rock. Oh, dear God, this is a shitty, shitty musical. Captions. I took a little log of this. Moody guitar. Ominous music. Distorted ominous music. Johnny equals Asian drummer. Anton equals beard guy. Carlo equals shoe man. At this point, I'm just trying to like find something to be interested in.
Just recording facts.
It's like, I don't know what this even says. Oh, man, what did this mean? Fine, but worse. Okay, I don't know what that means. Nick is a dick. Quote, thank you, Abraham Lincoln. This is what Liz says when the red-haired woman is hit with a sledgehammer. Because at first, when you see this guy dressed in a black suit and a hat, and he's kind of got a dark face, and I'm like, I laughed out loud, and I'm like, you know what? I was very happy that somebody finally fucking died in this movie.
They died on screen.
Yes, and actually was explicit about it. Johnny's is getting some arrow death because Johnny gets together with the girl who's got a tattoo somewhere under her pants. And so Johnny
ends up with the girl that Carlo was trying to go after.
Exactly. And the fun part is she's so fun and she's so weird. She's like, hey, let's blindfold each other. Although she doesn't really say that. She just kind of does it. So they blindfold each other. And then it's perfect because then we have the sledgehammer show up into frame.
In a sleeping bag, they are blindfolded.
Exactly.
Like, they're in the woods on the ground, blindfolding each other in a sleeping bag.
You never know who it might turn out to be, Eric. You're blindfolded. It might be her. It might be someone else in the sleeping bag.
Fair enough.
You really check the sleeping bag thoroughly to make sure there's not like 5 or 6 other people in the sleeping bag.
So the killer zips also, up. Go ahead.
I got to point out one other thing. The girl that Johnny ends up with is a way better singer than Johnny is.
That's true. Johnny cannot carry a tune. He's the drummer. I also figured this. Because everyone was challenged to come up with a song, even the guy who cannot sing has to kind of sing to like let the rest of the band know what the song sounds like. But he's doing it really loudly. He's doing it as if he's good. He's not. You know, that you could act like I don't quite get it.
The girl ends up sitting at his feet and looking up at him like he's some sort of rock god as he sings the song. And he is terrible.
He's pretty awful. He starts off weak and I'm no one to give criticism about this, but if I'm going to watch this thing and they're paying people to sing, this did not work very well. But anyway, so one of my favorite deaths I've ever seen in a horror movie. It's in one of these Friday the 13th movies where Jason does the same thing. He zips up his sleeping bag and then takes the sleeping bag and starts smacking it against a tree. I'm like, that's a really cool death. So they kind of stole that in this movie. They zipped up the bag and then I guess Nick goes to town with a sledgehammer, just destroying people in there. And I was like, all right, we're getting some violence. Okay. There's like no notes for a while. Then it says, I muted the song with the French girl. There's a scene with the French
girl. Part of the groupies. Je t'aime.
You didn't miss much. It was pretty bad.
Oh, don't forget, I had captions on. So there's like this girl who's teaching this French girl English and the French girl. And they go off together and they start doing this thing. Like, oh, it's a little cutesy, and it's like, oh, they're a couple? Maybe they're a couple. And then they're like talking about how to translate things, like, how do you say this? How do you say that? Then they start singing a little bit, then it stops. Then they start talking again, then it stops. They went back to singing. And then it's full on just two girls kind of bouncing up and down, moving their hair and singing. And I just said, fuck it. I'm muting this. I'm not listening to any more of this shit. Because the volume of the music is like way, way higher than any of the dialogues. I kept turning it up for the dialogue, and I'm getting blasted with shitty rock. And I don't even know what these girls are singing about, other than I read it and I was like, fuck this. All right. Stoning the blind kid. That's kind of a dick move.
Throwing rocks at the blind guy.
So the blind kid is in, he's in the woods after Carlo gets killed unexpectedly. I mean, very quickly. Carlo gets hit in the head with a sledgehammer. He's gone. Blind kid standing there. Like, who? This is the weird thing. He actually asks this out loud. Who are you? Why are you doing this? Like, what the fuck is the guy going to say? I'm your dad, and I just want to kill you. Like, it doesn't follow. But so the killer.
I'm Nick, and I want a new bass player.
So the killer, that's right, the blind kid's the bass player, with the amp, the portable amp. I'm glad they brought that. He takes rocks, and you don't see it. It's just off camera, but the rocks are just being chucked at this guy, and he's defenseless. It's such – and Liz was like, that's kind of mean. And I'm like, he's killing them. I think it's kind of okay.
Yeah, but you don't have to be like –
rubbing it in their face.
If you're going to be a serial killer, don't be a dick about it, okay, if you're going to do it. Okay, is Nick going to play guitar – all right, musical notes in blood on the car. I think at that point I'm like, Nick's got to be the killer. Is Nick going to play guitar while being stalked? Because at some point, like, it seems like the killer's following Nick and Ashley, and he just starts playing his guitar again. And that's like, what the hell are you doing? And even Ashley at this point is saying, what the fuck are you doing, Nick? Ashley decides to sing while being stalked. Nick kills the bad guy, is the bad guy, and then it just says Nick. And that's the end of my notes. And then I wrote a thing on Twitter saying I will not pick a movie. I'm going to give up two turns for that. I wrote a pile of garbage because I write PG stuff on actually, I could have probably gotten away with shit. But yeah, that was just such a shitty fucking movie. I'm just angry.
One of the worst.
It was there were very few, if any, redeeming qualities of that film. The frame rate thing was really bugging me. The music was not my kind of music. Like, there were maybe two tunes that were done in the entire thing that I found even remotely something I could tolerate. Because there's some folk rock bands that I actually like. So there was the opportunity for me to like some of the stuff, but this got a little too whiny and emo-ish, particularly whenever Nick was singing. He would whine his vocals quite a bit, mm-hmm. and it doesn't really appeal to me as a singing style. So, and it wasn't scary, and it wasn't funny.
I think part of my problem was that I hated most of the vocals so much that I paid zero attention anytime anyone started to sing.
Well,
like, I would just zone out.
You didn't know the dude was blind for most of the movie. So.
Exactly.
Attention and this movie are two things that did not meet for Eric Sandine.
There
was one part of the movie that I thought was, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I thought it was hilarious and inappropriately hilarious. So it's the French girl runs back to the camp to warn them because the girl she was just with just got dragged off into the woods and presumably killed. So she runs back and she's panicking and she's forgotten all her English. So she's speaking very quickly in French, including a little bit sing-songy while she's trying to relate the tragedy that has befallen her and her friend. And then the bad guy, which I guess is Nick, shows up behind her and whacks her in the back of the head with a sledgehammer, not knocking her over. He just essentially caves in the back of her skull, but you were only seeing her from the front. And everyone but Ashley runs away. And Ashley is still staring at the French girl, who she just saw get whacked in the back of the head with a sledgehammer, And the French girl kind of has this sort of dazed smile on her face. Then after about 15 or 20 seconds of standing there, a lone spurt of blood comes out at a jaunty angle from her head, and the French girl collapses, and that's when Ashley runs away. And I laughed my ass off, and I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be funny or not. But it sure was funny.
That might be the funniest part of the movie. I did watch a good part of the ending on mute because Nick was singing throughout the end of the movie. And this song, it seems like this movie was trying to be so much more deep. It's almost like a high schooler wrote it. It's like, I'm going to be really deep. It's going to be really dark. It's going to be about like feelings. It's like, no, you're writing a horror movie. And if you want to have this, if they cut out all the singing in this movie, it would be about 12 minutes. Yeah. And even that would have sucked. So not that good. Even the deaths, by the way. Okay, like I really like horror movies. I like being surprised by practical effects or special effects when it comes to deaths. This doesn't have any of that. I mean, I like the movie Hatchet, and that was pretty inventive in the way they're killing people. This is a guy with a sledgehammer killing people, which is okay. But it's not particularly gory, and the goriest thing is what is the goriest thing? I think the goriest thing is definitely when the killer's got Ashley on her stomach, and he's kind of like pulling away at meat, I guess.
Well,
I guess
there's also there's the shot of the redhead who has previously been killed, and face is all
and her face
squished
moves.
Out. Yeah. She's still apparently alive.
Right, she's gurgling, her eyes kind of over there. That was pretty gory. That was a good one. But
I like that this in the same episode where I said I'm licking my ass for 3 hours, Ayaz says killing people with a sledgehammer, which is okay.
Soundboard.
We're really setting a gold standard for podcasting.
We do have the line of what, like, if you're gonna be a serial killer, don't be a dick about it. I mean,
yep.
That's right.
That'll be the title of the episode. If you're going to be a serial killer, don't be a dick.
There's a scene where Ashley is giving Nick some shit about Nick being an asshole. And then Nick just kind of loses it. He gets a little angry, grabs his guitar, and starts playing a song saying, Nick is a prick, and starts saying some stuff. I'm like, yeah, play more of that stuff, because that's kind of funny, and it's a little edgier than the stuff you were doing. Everything else is like, minor chord. It's like, fucking hell. Fucking hell, please. Could you just get one power chord in there? Do something. Five fucking songs. That's all you need. Like, just do some three chord guitar rock. Just go. Jesus. It's terrible.
Hey, there was a song about Jesus at the beginning of the movie.
There was.
I was thinking that would be great for the episode when we had the episode called Kirk Cameron is Still Not Black.
God, that was the title.
Oh,
that
my
one.
Gosh.
That was the title of, I think, 100. So there you go.
That's a good title.
This one is, if you're a serial killer, don't be a dick. Is that the title today?
Yeah, I think if you're going to be a serial killer, don't be a dick is a great title.
Wonderful.
So now that we've covered that thoroughly, I hope that we have convinced the audience that there is no need to watch this. This, I think, was the directorial debut of D'Onofrio, and frankly, I don't think it ever needed to see the light of day. It was, you know, I was talking about how badly Johnny sang, that he was a terrible singer. He's a worse actor. Like, the acting in this film was pretty bad, and it ranged from pretty bad to passable. I don't think anyone came off looking great. And to be fair, from what I understand, a lot of the people who were in this movie were just normal folks who got pulled in to be in the film. So it's not like they necessarily had any screen acting experience for some of these folks. And it shows. Which is, I guess, a nice way of saying the acting sucks.
This might be the first movie where I put a review down just to write, this movie is shot in 15 frames per second. I have no idea why. It never gets any better. Do not watch this movie on a large screen. It is just maddening that thing came out. I don't know why it's shot that way. Like, at first, I thought the first scene is kind of like, we're going to do some crappy slow-mo. You didn't shoot it in a high enough frame rate, so we're going to slow it down, so it's going to be a little choppy. But the fact for 82 minutes it's like that, I don't understand how that's possible. Like, yeah, what is the point?
It's inexcusable.
Like, there's no point other than, like, you want to feel slightly off. Like, it's if you screen this in a theater, I don't know how people wouldn't get sick looking at this. So, yeah, there's my review coming up.
Well, here's something completely not related to that movie or any other movie that we watch. By the way, Eric, I think it's your turn. So you might want to start looking around.
Oh, I already picked it last week.
Oh, shit. What was it?
Jesus, I think I might have added it already. What was the movie?
That would be Daddy Can't Dance.
Oh, God, Daddy no, I didn't dance. Add it yet. Jesus. Maybe I was hoping that the movie would be pulled off Netflix before we get to it.
Former breakdancer Pete Weaver gets back into the game when he learns that he needs money to treat his daughter's serious illness.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at the cover of this. Oh, no. Oh, no, Eric. No. Okay, I'm adding it.
How did you even find this piece of shit?
I don't know.
We just watched the fucking musical, Eric.
Oh, no.
God damn.
How did you find this?
I found it when you were searching for yours last week somehow.
Okay, I can't wait to see the next stuff. More like Daddy Can't Dance, No Turning Back, Trash Dance, Battlefield America, and Gotta Dance. Boy.
I would love it if we just watched a movie and it suggested that one of the movies we should watch would be like the second Left Behind film, but not the first Left Behind film. Sort of just be random like that. So here's one of the reviews that I saw here. This movie was genuinely terrible. After 10 minutes, I decided to fast forward to the dancing scenes. They have some great breakers in it, but even those scenes were less than stellar. I think that's what made me most upset. I lost about 45 minutes of my life that I will never get back. If you're in the mood for something beyond camp, then watch this. Well, if it's beyond camp, that might be all right.
If it's
over-the-top terrible, that might be kind of fun. Although there are a lot of 5-star reviews in the actual reviews here, which whether that's people playing a terrible joke on everybody else or genuine enjoyment of the film, I do not know.
It's an hour and 45 minutes.
What's
it's a long
Jesus
movie.
Christ. Eric, it's a long movie. You know, I can't wait to see you again, Eric. You're going to get so many punches to the crotch from me.
I don't.
What does it predict you for, that you're? How much are you going to enjoy this movie according to Netflix, Eric?
So the best guess for me is 1.2.
That's me too.
It's gonna be bad.
Oh Christ Almighty! Well, the cover looks phenomenal. I gotta say, the guy in the upper left is really selling it for me. The purple pants. Oh man. You know what would make this movie awesome, though, right? Is if the daddy in Daddy Can't Dance was the same guy who was in that movie about the comedian who thought he had cancer, so he was making videos to tell his son how to be a man.
Oh, God.
It was that guy.
Is it the same dude? Is that what you're telling me right now?
No, I'm saying that's what would make this movie awesome, is if it was that same guy.
So, like, here's the actual art. I don't know. This is our low-tech way of showing you. So, This is going to be great. Daddy Can't Dance.
It's
going
to be something.
What else do I...
So, okay, unrelated to that and unrelated to the movies, what do you guys think? We're going to go into a little bit of the tech world here. So I apologize because all of us see a lot of that in our day-to-day jobs already. What do you guys think about Microsoft skipping Windows 9 to go straight to Windows 10?
I think it's a brilliant move. I mean, honestly, you know, obviously 8 was a bad branding issue for them. So why even try 9? Why not move into the double digits?
And the other thing was, I always thought, I wonder if this is a joke in the sense that it's usually the second version that's good, right? So Microsoft, They did like Windows 7 was really successful, but the one before it was Vista, and that was a mess. But the one before that was XP, so that was okay. So it's like every other release is really good. So to go from 7 to 8, and 8 was kind of messy, let's just say that at least. But 8's the messed up one, right? So if you go over 9, and you go to 10, isn't that the next fucked up version again? Because the 9's supposed to be the good one.
I don't
see what I'm saying.
I don't know that.
I see where you're going with this.
I don't want to be introduced if they fucked up one right away. Like, just
here's my question: Have there been two consecutive releases of Windows that, or rather, have there ever been three consecutive releases of Windows that have followed the same scheme, numbering or naming scheme? And I don't think there are.
One.
Well, so we've got back seven, when there was Windows NT, yeah.
Because there's 7 and 8, but there was no 6, and there's no 9. So,
well, wasn't 7 trying to pull in the branding from Windows Phone under the same branding? Like, wasn't that the idea there? To move Windows 7 to OS, or to Microsoft OS, or whatever the hell Windows Phone was called.
Well, what happened was they were really, really looking to bring that together with Windows 8. I mean, that's
right.
That was a big idea, was that with the touchscreen interface stuff, Windows 8 was going to become the standard operating system across all their devices. So much so that they're dropping the Windows Phone brand entirely. There's not going to be a Windows Phone. It's just going to be Windows. On a phone. So you can get a Windows phone, but not a Windows Phone phone.
Well, yeah, because it used to be the Whatever. Windows Phone series phone, remember? That was
the most exciting thing from the release announcement today is that they are updating the command prompt, and you will now be able to copy and paste directory structures into the command prompt. And I'm really sorry for people who use Windows regularly, because I didn't know you couldn't do that.
I remember you couldn't do that. That was a real pain in the ass. It's like you'd have to write it down and then retype it and then you'd fuck it up.
It's been a long time since I used Windows to actually develop something. So like, so once I heard that was the news today, I was like, oh dear lord.
I got a Mac and I'm like, you can push shit in Terminal like this? No way. Paste works in Terminal? That's fucked up.
I like that the Wall Street Journal says that Microsoft is abandoning their numbering convention. And I'm thinking, when did they fucking have a numbering convention? Yeah.
Well, there was Xbox, right? There was Xbox and then there was Xbox 360. And that was followed by Xbox One. So that made a lot of sense.
I don't know that you can call that a convention. Maybe I think they're just continuing their capricious numbering system that only makes sense in Redmond, I guess. I don't know. I mean...
I don't think it makes sense there.
I think the big issue is that they had what appeared to be. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, let's be fair, because Microsoft is going to Windows 10, but Mac has been on OS 10 for 12 years. So
it's true.
So let's, you know, there are multiple jokes we can make. It doesn't all have to be at Microsoft's expense.
I'm just waiting for Apple to change the OS X 10.10 Yosemite release just to OS X 11 tomorrow. They just released the Gold Master beta, so they could do it. Why not?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. See, the thing is, I think the idea is Microsoft appeared to have settled on 7, 8. That seems to make a lot of sense.
Right.
But it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. I almost think that, because I saw a throwaway line from the event where they said, well, we already had a Windows 1, so we didn't want to do that again. I'm like, well, that might have made more sense, actually, because why not? If you got Xbox One and you got this one kind of OneNote and you have, is it called OneDrive now? SkyDrive used to be called, I think it's called OneDrive.
Yeah.
Now. So, like, you already have the branding. So just either drop the number entirely, just say it's Windows, right? Or just go one.
But isn't Office still called Office 360 though?
That's
Office 365.
Yeah, because you can use it
so
all the time.
Yeah, you are fucked in a leap year, by the way. February 29th, none of your shit is going to work.
Yeah, the 365.25, that's the upgrade. So it'll add up for you. Yeah, so I think it's not going to matter. And while, like, the other thing is, I bet you the normal consumer won't even realize they didn't get a 9. They're going to be like, oh, I think I was on Windows 9 before I got to 10. I bet you people will say that because they're not going to even be aware.
It'll just be the podcasters who are all making fun of it for, and the people working the tech blogs and news sites. But anyway, all right.
It was a great SEO grab. SEO grab. Who else was writing about Windows 10? Nobody. That was writing Windows 9. So fuck you, SEO. That's what it is. That idea was from a friend of mine, Marco.
Someone must have clearly registered the URL Windows 9, and then they're like, well, fuck that guy. We're going straight to 10. Yeah, Eric's like, God damn it.
The URL.
So, all right. Okay. This brings me to the other. I wanted to do a little radio drama for our listeners, something that we don't normally do. And I asked, did you want to pull up the script?
I have it right here on my iPad.
Oh, awesome. Okay. I didn't see you in the document. So here's the thing. Did you guys actually see the preview for Taken 3?
I watched it before the show.
Yep.
Did you, Eric?
Just watched it.
Uh-huh. Okay. So Taken 3, for those out there who are watching this or listening to this, go and check out the Taken 3 preview. It's essentially what would happen if you mixed Taken with The Fugitive, from what I can tell in the preview. But I have never watched any of the Taken movies. However, I feel like I have a really strong grip on the movies just based upon the previews I've seen. So with that in mind, I took it upon me to write the script for the Taken 4 preview. Now, keep in mind, for Taken 3, they've decided to go all edgy and replace the E in Taken with the number 3. So I followed suit. In Taken 4, I took the A out of Taken and replaced it with a 4, but I'm just going to call it Taken 4. Now, for the purposes of this little radio play, Iaz is going to play the part of Liam Neeson.
I'm not doing an accent, so I'm just going to let people know that.
That's fine. You're just going to read the lines. I do not know what Liam Neeson's character's name is, so he will just be Liam Neeson. Eric will be playing the part of the menacing voice on the other end of the phone that's always in these movies. And I will read the stage directions and the voiceover guy at the end. So with that in mind, here is the preview for Taken 4. A phone rings. Liam Neeson picks it up.
Hello?
We've taken your daughter.
I'll shoot every last one of you.
We've taken your gun.
What? I'll get another gun. I'm going to find you, even if I have to drive to the ends of the earth.
Well, you've taken your car.
Hang on. Look, that doesn't matter. What matters is I'll kill you with whatever I have at hand, whether it's a knife or...
Well, you've taken the knives.
Doesn't have to be a knife. I'll kill you with my bare hands if I have to.
We've taken your hands.
Huh? Son of a bitch, my hands. But wait a minute. If I don't have hands, how did I answer the phone?
We've taken the phone.
Now hang on.
Taken 4. We stopped making sense 2 movies ago. I think it's a Hollywood blockbuster. Just waiting to happen. I was really pleased with myself with that script.
And the worst thing was, after I watched the Taken 3 preview, I watched the Taken 2 preview, because I've watched Taken, not none of the sequels, and I liked Taken. It was a fun action movie. It was ridiculous. Yeah. And there was no reason for a second one, although they try to explain it, why there's a second one, and why there's a third one. They're just revenge movies. But this ridiculous script is pretty in line, but something has broken my brain, and it's the Lego movie. I cannot hear Liam Neeson without hearing Bad Cop from the Lego movie. So he's no longer threatening at all when he's like, I will kill you. And you're like, and then you're waiting for the high-pitched squeaky voice. Like, I'm going to be just fine. You're like, what? So I'm busted by the Lego movie forever. So thanks for that.
That's fair. I felt the same way watching Guardians of the Galaxy. And whatever Chris Pratt was talking, I was thinking he's the Lego guy.
Well, he basically did the same movie, right? He was the kind of bumbling leader that nobody really believed in. And he even has a scene where he's got a plan, or like 11% of a plan. Very similar to like, I have a plan, I think. It's like,
yeah. It felt like same. Yeah, the only other thing I had to talk about for this this episode is the fact that I discovered today that there's going to be a Big Lebowski pinball machine.
Yes.
Made out of the Netherlands. There was a video that showed the playing board, or at least one of the concepts for it, and it looks amazing. It looks amazing. And it's actually, there's the biglebowskipinball.com/game certificate.
B-roll may not match what we're talking about at any time. That's a
right.
Disclaimer.
I'm like, Eric, that has nothing to do with the Big Lebowski pinball machine.
It doesn't?
Does it? I can't see enough of it.
Now we got your middle name, the Church of the Latter-day Saints. There's a angel with a baton?
Nope,
what's going on there?
It does not say saints.
Oh, the Latter-day Church of the Latter-day Dude.
Oh, okay, that's why that was cut off.
Sorry about that.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited by this game. I love that I was reading the frequently asked questions, and there was a part where they said, is there a lock on it for like a parental lock? And they said, yes. And if you're a parent, you are going to want to use it, which I thought was very encouraging. But yeah, you can actually pre-order one of these. It's only $8,500.
Well, screw that. You can get like a Super Shot for that.
Yeah, you could get a Bally's machine for $8,000, an old Bally's machine for $8,000.
So there you go. We're like, yeah, we got $8,000 and we're not spending it on that. So enjoy. Wow.
But this is a brand new pinball machine using Bally parts, so that if you ever have to replace anything, you can easily get the replacement parts.
Oh,
which
I think is actually
a great idea.
No, that's brilliant. That's awesome.
Yeah, I would totally, if I had an extra $10,000 just laying around, I would totally get one of these.
Yeah.
And
it looks like a pretty machine.
Yeah, it does. I am lagging so far behind, guys.
In what way?
Well, as in, when I talk, I'm actually watching my video, and I have like a 5-second delay on between when I said something and when I appear to say it on the video.
It seems to be catching up every now and then, so we'll see how that works. Anyway, I was. Pinball. Back when I was in the San Francisco office at CNET, there was like a floor that had a couple of pinball machines by the ping pong tables. And right now I'm in the New York office. Well, not right now, but when I'm going to work, I'm in the New York office. And we have one foosball table. And I find this to be deplorable. This is terrible working conditions. We should have a dartboard, a shuffleboard table, just like they got in San Francisco. So
you know what? I completely agree with you, and I work from home most of the time. So I'm going to need I'll expense it. You know, $8,000 for a pinball machine.
I would like the $8,000 Super Shot basketball thing. I looked it up on Amazon. You get 4 of them, all right? So you can have competitive play. So if anybody's listening from CBS, which I'm sure they listen to everything I do. I'm just kidding, because I don't know who the hell listens to the show. I would like a Super Shot basketball machine somewhere in the building over on 28th Street. This is my actual formal plea. And if anything actually happens with this, that'd be insane. Also, it's under construction like mad right now. So
yeah,
I was going to say,
you should make sure that you tag CBS Interactive in the show notes so that they come watch it.
There's a good idea. It's a wonderful idea. Anything I've said is not the opinion of CBS Interactive, nor CNET, or any of the other subsidiaries. There. I'm just the person.
Before Discovery purchased How Stuff Works, we operated pretty much like an internet startup, which meant that we also had a pretty cool break room, and it included like an Xbox with a, you know, I think this was, yeah, it had to be an Xbox 360. with a Kinect. We had a PS3. We had a foosball table. We had a couple of other things, just kind of cool stuff, which no one had a chance to ever really use because it was so far away from where all the, at least no one in the editorial staff did. One, we were really busy, and two, we were the furthest from that room. So the people who tended to use it were in like sales. Those guys were the ones using it. And then after Discovery had purchased us, we downsized significantly over two separate rounds. And we first we lost the main room where we had all the stuff, and we kind of moved most of it over to a consolidated space. But then we lost that and moved to a different floor, and now we don't have any of the fun stuff anymore. But then Discovery sold How Stuff Works, and the hope is that now we're going to move into a new space that will bring back some of the cool things that we used to have in the older times before the Empire. So we're hoping that that we actually will get some fun stuff. I would love a pinball machine because I'm a pinball maniac. I love it. I mean, a good pinball machine will keep me entertained for a really long time.
I played way too much basketball in San Francisco. What would happen is at 3 o'clock, I would decide whether I'm getting my second coffee or a cup of tea to calm me down, because it's usually what I need to either. I need to be brought up or brought down based on whatever's happening by 3 o'clock. And so when I would get tea, it was so freaking hot that I was like, I needed a way to kind of time out and not pay attention to for a little bit. So I put it down, go to the basketball machine, which was right next to the free coffee and tea that we had a barista in the break room. They still do.
It seems like a horrible idea to put a coffee machine next to a basketball machine.
Well, it's not a machine. It's an actual, like, it's in the break room, and it's like, it's nearby. So you walk towards the hallway, and there's the basketball game, which is oddly right behind security. So I think I only would do this once a day because I didn't want to drive them crazy, because like, it's noisy, and I don't know why it's behind them. Anyway, so I would do that so the tea would cool by the end of the game. But I became obsessed to the point where the damn tea would be cold. So I worked on that after a while. Never beat my own high score. Like, I wanted to beat my – I had 108. That was my high score in like 2 minutes. And I tried to beat it on my last day, and I got to 107, and then it didn't count the next shot, and it pisses me off even further.
Well, I want to say we also had a basketball game at How Stuff Works. We kept it right next to the hutch that held all the fine china, so I know what you're talking about. It's just, in retrospect, it was a foolish idea, but
I saw this awesome thing on, I think it was Flipboard. It looked like, you know, that regular china pattern that you see on everything, is that blue and white pattern.
Yep.
But this was a porcelain version of crushed beer cans with that pattern on it, and I was like, it looked really quite cool. It looked like this garbage, but it was china at the same time. And in my house growing up, my mom had cabinets full of this stuff that we could never touch, never use. And I'm like, Mom, why do we own it? We can't use the fucking plates. Then I get in trouble for swearing. But that did happen. I hated that. But I'm like, this is kind of a neat thing. If you're never going to use it, might as well be art. And I quite enjoyed that thing. So if anybody sees it, let me know. I think it's kind of a cool idea. Porcelain garbage. Art. There's art there too.
Oh, good times. Well, I think we've had a fun time today. I think we've really discussed the merits of horror comedy musicals, or perhaps the lack thereof. We have a healthy sense of terror for the next movie that we're going to be forced to watch, thanks to Mr. Sandine.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've pretty much, and we've discussed, you know, technology, both as in the form of operating systems and pinball, not to mention basketball. So I think this is a good place to stop, don't you guys?
I think all the fans out there, remember to snip out the radio play and just spread it everywhere. Actually, we might do that.
Yes.
Do it as a special. I might actually bother to do that. I don't have to do the editing, which was nothing before in the first place. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it's time to look to the future. Next week on Podcast Without Pretense.
That movie was a total lie. Daddy could dance.
I turned my hat backwards and then forwards and then backwards just to support Daddy when he started dancing.
And beer cans is way more dangerous than you think it is.